So picture this. It's 2008, and there's a rocket engineer standing in a control room, right? And they are desperately trying to figure out how to build an orbital launch vehicle. But the math, like the brutal, unforgiving financial math on the table, basically says they're entirely out of money.
They were literally days away from total bankruptcy.
Exactly. Days away. And today we were looking at the exact, founder operating system that took that specific moment of near death and turned it into, well, a multi-planetary infrastructure. Welcome to the deep dive. We are unpacking this massive, super comprehensive new 2026 report from the American newspaper and American TV. It's called Elon Musk's Success System.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating read.
It really is. And our mission for you today isn't to just like rehash the mythology. We really want to deconstruct the actual repeatable architecture that built PayPal, Tesla, SpaceX, Starlink X, and XAI. We want to figure out how you actually turn an impossible problem into an investable, recruitable reality.
Yeah, but to do that properly, we really have to establish the baseline rule of this report right up front. Because this analysis, it is not a one-person superhero comic. It focuses on the strategic pattern of the founder, yes, but we have to explicitly acknowledge that these companies depend entirely on, thousands of brilliant engineers, supply chain operators, regulatory lawyers, and this is key, massive pools of institutional capital to actually function. If you go into this thinking it's all about just one solitary genius, you completely miss the actual mechanics of how the system works.
I am so glad we are putting that on the table first because, trying to copy the public drama of this founder instead of actually studying the underlying discipline of the system is a genuinely dangerous trap for your own career or business. So let's look at the engine. The report bases everything on this core concept of credible impossibility creation. Can you walk us through what that actually means?
Yeah, so it basically operates as a self-reinforcing flywheel. The foundational step is to choose an objective that doesn't just look difficult, but looks, well, irrationally impossible to your average industry veteran.
Like beyond just hard.
Exactly. We aren't talking about, building a slightly faster microchip or a better ad targeting algorithm. We are talking about forcing a total global transition away from fossil fuels or like making humanity a multiplanetary species.
Okay, let's unpack this because I'm just thinking if I walk into a venture capital firm tomorrow and say, hey, I want to colonize Mars, they aren't going to write me a check. They're going to call security.
Right, yeah, they'd laugh you out of the room.
So how does choosing a ridiculously impossible problem actually serve as a concrete business advantage?
It's all about the talent market. If you pitch an incremental improvement, you are going to attract incremental talent. But an impossibly hard problem is this massive magnetic asset if you're trying to recruit like the absolute top 1% of global engineers.
Oh, because they want a real challenge.
Precisely. Elite talent wants to make history. They want to work on the hardest physics problems of their generation. So the sheer audacity of the mission attracts the best minds. And then that talent pool builds a highly functional concrete product.
Which then gets noticed.
Right. That physical product generates intense organic media attention. And that massive global narrative allows the company to raise the insane amounts of capital required to fund these incredibly long research and development cycles.
It's almost like it's like a magician telling the audience exactly how a mind-bending trick is going to end, right?
Oh.
And then they use the audience's gasp of disbelief to actually fund the invention of the trapdoor. Like the
Yeah.
sheer scale of the claim pays for the R&D. But hold on, let me play devil's advocate here for a second.
Sure.
Isn't that just a super sophisticated hype cycle? I mean, how does that not just collapse into some Ponzi scheme of promises? The hype surely outruns the reality at some point, right?
You've zeroed in on the absolute core vulnerability of the system right there. And the report is very explicit about this. The flywheel only survives if the technical progress is real. Media attention without actual delivery is just vaporware, and that breaks the system permanently.
Because investors stop believing you.
Exactly. The actual genius of the operating system isn't making wild promises. It is the ability to brutally compress the engineering feedback loops. You have to provide physical, undeniable proof like, a rocket successfully landing vertically or a car autonomously navigating a complex intersection just in time to keep the capital flowing. You are essentially racing the clock of investor patience.
Wow. Okay, so PayPal proved that this flywheel works for software. But, bits are cheap. Atoms are really expensive. To prove this system wasn't just some Silicon Valley digital fluke, it had to survive, like the most capital-intensive, graveyard-ridden industry on Earth physical manufacturing, which means we need to talk about the transition from software to electric vehicles.
Yeah, but before we look at the cars, we really have to recognize the apprenticeship phase that made the hardware phase possible at all. The report frames the late 90s era of PayPal as this foundational education.
Right, back when it was X.com.
Yeah, originally X.com, which had this huge sweeping vision of being a universal online bank. But market realities basically forced them to narrow their focus to a very specific wedge product, which was online payments paired tightly with eBay's marketplace.
And it was not a smooth ride. I mean, reading the report, it outlines massive fraud issues, right? Bots draining accounts, severe friction with banking regulators, and this is crazy internal boardroom wars where the founder was actually ousted as CEO while he was on his honeymoon.
Yeah, it was chaotic. But the outcome wasn't failure. That intense crucible taught them the foundational mechanics of speed and risk management. And specifically, it taught them how to harness network effects.
Okay, let's define that for the listener, because network effects is one of those terms that gets thrown around a lot in tech. Mm. What was the actual mechanism of the network effect at PayPal?
So a network effect is simply when a product becomes more valuable because more people are using it. Like, if I have PayPal and you don't, I can't pay you. But if I convince you to sign up, the whole system just became twice as useful to both of us.
Makes sense.
And the PayPal team mastered how to artificially ignite that effect by literally paying users $10 to sign up and then another $10 to refer a friend.
They just gave away money.
They bought their way into exponential growth. And by doing that, they navigated the regulatory chaos and pushed through to a 2002 IPO, which led to a massive acquisition by eBay. And that exit provided the raw personal capital necessary to seed the hardware flywheel we see later.
Which perfectly sets the stage for Tesla. And here's where the strategy totally pivots. People were already making electric vehicles back then, but they were, essentially glorified golf carts. The goal wasn't just to make an electric car, it was to make an entirely new industrial category fundamentally desirable.
Right, and the 2006 master plan is the blueprint for how this operating system sequences the market. Look, if your ultimate goal is a cheap, mass-market electric vehicle, your biggest enemy is the cost of lithium-ion batteries. In 2006, those batteries were astronomically expensive.
So you couldn't put them in a cheap car.
Exactly. If you tried to build a $30,000 electric car back then, the battery costs would eat the entire budget. You'd be left with a slow car that could only drive, like, 40 miles.
Right, so you flip the limitation into a feature. Instead of trying to build a cheap car with a terrible battery, you build a $100,000 sports car where the massive battery cost is easily absorbed by the luxury price tag. You target high-status buyers, proving that an electric car can literally beat a Ferrari off the starting line.
And doing that alters the entire psychology of the market. You use the revenue and the engineering lessons from that low-volume sports car to fund a medium-volume luxury sedan. And then you use the revenue from the sedan to finally build the high-volume affordable models. You make the technology an exclusive status symbol first, so the mass market craves it later.
And here is where it completely shatters traditional business logic. Think about how much legacy automakers spend on advertising, like billions of dollars a year. Tesla spent zero.
Yep, zero.
The product's actual features, the instant acceleration, the over-the-air software updates that made the car better while you slept, and the grand public mission of transitioning the globe to sustainable energy. That was the marketing budget. The mission itself did the heavy lifting of customer acquisition.
It did, but we cannot ignore the financial mechanics working behind the scenes here. The report explicitly highlights that capital formation and government policy are load-bearing pillars of this system. It is a total myth that this is the purely free market phenomenon. Just look at the mechanism of regulatory credits.
Yes, let's break that down, because I found it brilliant and honestly slightly ruthless. How do those regulatory credits actually function?
Well, various state governments required automakers to sell a certain percentage of zero-emission vehicles. If a legacy automaker, let's say they only sell gas-guzzling trucks, fails to meet that quota, they get hit with massive fines. But they're allowed to buy surplus credits from a company that exceeds the quota.
And Tesla only sells zero-emission cars.
Exactly. Because Tesla only sold EVs, they had a mountain of these credits. So Tesla sold them at a pure profit to their competitors.
Meaning they literally forced rival combustion engine companies to subsidize Tesla's own research and development. It's a masterclass in capturing public policy incentives. So the system isn't just building a cool car, it's building a financial machine that leverages state mandates, retail investor enthusiasm, and equity markets all at the same time.
That's precisely the point the report makes. And once that framework was proven in the consumer automotive space, the strategy scaled up dramatically. We moved from consumer goods to literal planetary infrastructure.
Which means we are talking about SpaceX and Starlink. Space is like the ultimate boss level of capitalism. It is a graveyard of bankruptcies, insanely high capital requirements, and absolutely zero room for error.
Yeah, and to survive that environment, SpaceX utilized a deeply aggressive form of vertical integration.
Stop right there for a second. Vertical integration is another one of those textbook terms. Why couldn't a massive legacy company like, say, Boeing or Lockheed Martin just do the exact same thing? What is the actual secret sauce of SpaceX's manufacturing?
It basically comes down to incentive structures and supply chains. Legacy aerospace companies operated largely on cost-plus government contracts.
Okay, meaning what?
Meaning the government paid for all their costs plus a guaranteed profit percentage on top of that. That incentivized them to be slow, to use, you know, hundreds of expensive subcontractors spread across different congressional districts just to maintain political support. If they needed a specialized valve, they'd buy a $10 million valve from a subcontractor who took 2 years to deliver it. SpaceX rejected that entirely. Vertical integration meant they walked down the hall, designed the valve themselves, built it in their own machine shop for a fraction of the cost, and tested it that exact same afternoon.
And they embraced visible failure to speed up that testing, right? Like, they would launch a prototype, watch it explode in spectacular fashion, find the math error in the debris, redesign the part, and launch again weeks later. That is terrifying for a traditional PR department, but it proves to your engineering talent that the only metric that matters is iterative speed.
Exactly.
But I do have a question on behalf of the listener who might be wondering about the lone maverick narrative. We always hear about, you know, fighting red tape and ignoring the government, but this report paints a very different reality regarding government partnerships, doesn't it?
Oh, it completely dismantles the lone maverick myth.
Huh.
Operating symbiotically at the boundary of markets in the state is actually one of the 11 core pillars of the founder's success system.
Mm.
The report cites a highly specific example, a $2.89 billion firm fixed price contract from NASA for the human landing system.
So they're working very closely with the state.
Yes. The system doesn't ignore the government. It excels at turning public sector goals, like America maintaining superiority in space and returning to the moon, into private sector execution. NASA's demand is the anchor tenant that makes the private ambition financially possible.
So they use public money to build the delivery trucks, meaning the rockets. But once you have the cheapest, most reusable delivery trucks in the world, you don't just stay a courier service. You build your own cargo. You build Starlink.
Right. And Starlink is the strategic masterstroke of the entire infrastructure phase. It leverages SpaceX's massive launch moat because they can put mass into low Earth orbit exponentially cheaper and faster than any competitor on the planet. They can afford to launch thousands of their own small satellites. They turned a hardware capability launching rockets into a recurring revenue global telecommunications subscription network.
It's the ultimate compounding advantage. You aren't just selling a rocket launch once. You are selling internet access every single month to individuals in rural areas, massive maritime enterprises, and global militaries. But reading the report, it warns that when you become planetary infrastructure, you run into a totally different class of limits.
Yeah, you step out of consumer business and into hardcore geopolitics. The report highlights spectrum politics as a major friction point.
Spectrum politics.
Yeah. Spectrum refers to the invisible real estate of radio frequencies. You need government permission to beam data down on those frequencies. So suddenly your business model requires negotiating with authoritarian regimes, navigating complex national security sensitivities, and managing the literal physical risk of space debris. Selling a fast electric sedan is a product challenge. Beaming internet into a war zone is a geopolitical tightrope.
Which is a brilliant conceptual pivot into what might be the most volatile application of this entire founder operating system. We've gone from the digital software of PayPal to the physical atoms of Tesla to the planetary infrastructure of SpaceX. Now the deep dive transitions into the ultimate intangibles, digital attention, and artificial intelligence. Let's look at the friction points of X and XAI.
This is where the operating system's hardware-centric culture faces its absolute greatest resistance. Let's analyze X first, the $44 billion acquisition formerly known as Twitter. The strategic objective is clear control of the underlying public conversation layer of the internet, and eventually evolve it into an everything app that seamlessly integrates media, payments, and digital services.
But the report details severe structural weaknesses when applying the established playbook here. It's like applying rocket factory urgency to social media moderation. It feels a bit like using a sledgehammer to perform open heart surgery. It's the wrong tool for a delicate ecosystem. In a rocket factory, if a titanium strut fails, you find the math error, you replace the strut, and it never fails again. But a social network is organic and reactive. If you aggressively tweak the moderation algorithm to solve one behavioral issue, the user base mutates, and three new cultural problems grow in its place.
You're hitting on the exact pivot point the report identifies, a profound management style mismatch. The hardware culture is built on moving fast and breaking things in public, but a social media platform's revenue model relies heavily on corporate advertisers.
And advertisers hate broken things.
Exactly. Advertisers demand predictability, brand safety, and a stable environment. The report points to the abrupt July 2023 rebrand to X, the aggressive mass layoffs that removed institutional knowledge, and the subsequent departure of major advertisers as the direct consequence of applying a hardware execution culture to an intangible business built on trust and attention.
The mechanism of failure is the clash of revenue models. Like, fixed-price government contracts reward raw capability. Advertisers reward stability. But then the system attempts to use X as the massive distribution engine for the next frontier play, which is XAI.
Correct. XAI is the entry vehicle into the hyper-competitive frontier AI race. The stated public mission is incredibly grand to accelerate human scientific discovery and mathematically understand the universe. But on a practical mechanical level, the focus is the Grok API.
Let's quickly clarify what that API is for the listener.
Sure. An API is essentially a digital bridge that allows different software programs to talk to each other. In this case, it allows developers to plug Grok's reasoning and real-time search capabilities into their own applications. And the crucial, unfair advantage XAI possesses is its deep integration with X. The report notes an all-stock deal that valued X at $33 billion, which specifically tied the real-time data hose and user distribution of the social network directly to the training of XAI's models.
So we see the flywheel spinning up again. You broadcast a massive narrative like understanding the universe to attract elite AI researchers who are currently the most scarce and expensive talent on Earth. You use that talent to build a product that requires insane, eye-watering amounts of capital just to pay for the raw computing power.
But just like with social media, artificial intelligence demands a level of data rights discipline, ethical safety guardrails, and regulatory credibility. Extreme, breakneck speed can sometimes threaten those very requirements. The founder system is being stress tested in real time by the nature of the technology itself.
Which brings us to the most practical, actionable part of this deep dive. We've explored the massive successes, the geopolitical limits, and the cultural friction points. Now we need to look at the fragility of the entire architecture. Because if you are listening to this right now, you might be tempted to think, great, I'll just go into work tomorrow, sleep under my desk on the factory floor, demand the impossible from my team, and create a $1 trillion company.
Oh, the report specifically and aggressively warns against that misinterpretation. There are deep systemic vulnerabilities in this model. The most glaring is key person concentration. The report references Tesla's 2025 10K filing.
A 10K is the brutally honest, legally required annual report a public company must file with the SEC outlining all its existential risks, correct?
Exactly. And in that legally binding document, Tesla explicitly notes that the company is highly, perhaps dangerously, dependent on its CEO, who simultaneously holds executive or foundational positions at SpaceX, XAI, The Boring Company, and Neuralink.
That is a lot of hats.
It is. That level of extreme centralization is incredibly effective at energizing a startup in its early days. But it creates massive governance bottlenecks and profound continuity risks as the companies scale to global importance.
There is also the invisible cost of the culture itself, right?
Definitely. A relentless, pressure-driven culture can absolutely produce incredible short-term engineering breakthroughs. But over a long enough timeline, the mechanism breaks down. It risks severe employee burnout, high attrition rates, and the subsequent loss of deep institutional memory. Furthermore, there is the persistent risk of overpromising. Setting wildly aggressive timelines is a tool to mobilize a complacent team, but repeated public misses eventually erode consumer and regulatory trust, especially when you are operating in safety-sensitive markets like autonomous driving or spaceflight.
So let's bring this down to earth. Imagine you are sitting in a boardroom right now or prepping for a Monday morning strategy sprint with your team. The goal is not to walk into the office and manufacture theatrical chaos just because you read a headline about a billionaire doing it.
No, not at all. And to help with that translation, the report provides a strategic scorecard to separate the practical, repeatable lessons from the highly dangerous imitations.
Okay, let's hear the practical side first.
The practical lessons you can actually use are structural. First, choose a problem that compounds in economic importance over time. Second, build a concrete wedge product. Do not just pitch a grand 50-year vision. Give your users a highly functional tool they can adopt today. Third, shorten your engineering feedback loops by owning as much of your supply chain as possible. And fourth, learn how to use a compelling public narrative to recruit elite talent and finance your reality.
And what goes on the dangerous imitations side of the scorecard?
Confusing personal intensity with actual business strategy. Centralizing every single minor decision around yourself until the company paralyzes when you leave the room. Treating political controversy as a substitute for a marketing budget. And fundamentally ignoring the hidden cultural and governance costs of moving too fast in complex systems. The ultimate bottom line of the entire 2026 report boils down to six words. Imitate the discipline, not the drama. Ambition without profound technical depth, without structured access to capital markets, and without the hard-earned competence to actually survive a near-death corporate crisis, that isn't a strategy. That is just expensive theater.
Imitate the discipline, not the drama. I love that. Let's recap the journey we've taken through this research today. We started by breaking down the underlying engine of credible impossibility creation. Understanding how claiming the impossible is actually a tactical mechanism to attract elite talent and patient capital. We saw how that theory was forged in the regulatory fires of PayPal. We examined how Tesla turned the technological limitation of expensive batteries into a luxury status symbol, forcing the market to fund the EV transition. We looked at how SpaceX rejected legacy supply chains for vertical integration, scaling up to planetary infrastructure with Starlink. And finally, we explored the very real friction of applying a hardware-centric iterative execution culture to the delicate, trust-based economies of X and XAI.
It is, without question, a remarkable and unprecedented architectural achievement in modern business history. But as the breakdown of the mechanism shows, keeping this flywheel spinning requires a highly specific alchemy of massive capital concentration, extreme risk tolerance, and relentless technical execution to prevent it from collapsing under its own gravitational weight.
Which leaves us with a final, lingering question for you to ponder long after you finish listening to us today. If this incredible founder operating system relies so heavily on a massive, almost unprecedented concentration of capital, an intense dependency on a single key decision maker, and an organizational stomach that can endure constant near-death corporate crises, is it actually a sustainable blueprint for the future of business innovation? Or are we all just trying to reverse engineer a historical anomaly that can never be perfectly replicated? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the underlying mechanics of innovation. We will catch you next time.